For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It's November the 6th, and we're on page 600. Pasuk Chavdal, verse 24. Now, until now, as I mentioned to you, when the Torah uses the term Tamei and Tahar, which is usually translated to mean pure and impure, until now in the parasha it has meant kosher and non-kosher. Here, we're now going to use the term Tuma and Tara, or Tamei and Tahar, in the classic sense, to mean pure and impure. So we're switching gears, even though we're using the same words, Tamei and Tahar. So the pasuk says, Ula eila titamahu, to these you shall become impure, meaning that if one comes in contact with these things that we're about to list, one becomes impure. Kol hanogea b'niv lasam yitma ad ha'arav, anybody who touches their corpse will become tamei until evening. For kol hanosei b'niv lasam, anybody who carries their corpse, yichabes b'gadav, shall wash his clothing, which means put his clothing in the mikvah, v'tamei ad ha'arav, and be tamei until evening.
Is this just what he's wearing then, or all of his life?
No, what he's wearing then. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now, we haven't said what you've touched yet. What corpses? Corpses of what? So we're going to talk about that right now. Now, before I do so, before we read, I'm going to read a few psukim. Before we do that, just bear in mind like as follows. The laws of Tuma and Tahara, of purity and impurity, are fairly complex. And they are, as with all areas of halacha, they begin with what the Torah says, and then you have layer upon layer of drabanans, of rabbinic additions to what the Torah says. Because we don't practice these laws regularly, therefore, for us, we are starting with a great deal of ignorance about how these things work, because it's not in our daily lives. Meaning that if we were to have a class about basar v'chalav, about milk and meat, so that you already know that chicken is also considered meat, even though the Torah, it's not. But you already know that. So we would be beginning knowing that somehow chicken is going to be prohibited with milk. But even though the Torah only says meat, we would get to it. We'd say it's a rabbinic addition to the Torah law of meat and milk. And the same thing applies to many other types of halachos, Shabbos, many types of things. Because we practice it all the time, we're aware of what the practical halacha is, or generally what it is. And then when we read it in the Torah, it's a question of how do we get from point A to point B, from what the Torah says to how we practice today. With Tamei and Tahar, with purity and impurity, because we do not practice it today, that doesn't mean it doesn't take place. It does take place, but it's irrelevant, as we're going to show shortly. So because of that, we're not familiar with how to practically deal with these halachos, and therefore, what we read in the Torah, that's the only basis of our knowledge. But really, there's a whole bunch of other layer upon layer of halacha that is added that you find in the Mishnayos and in the Gemara. So as we go through these psukim, we're going to focus on what the Torah says, and what is the halacha according to the Torah, when applicable, when I know it, and at times when it's necessary, I'll throw in what the rabbis have added on. But our focus is really to understand what the Torah says about Tamei and Tahar. But you should know that in terms of practice, it's going to be much more than what we're going to read here, because there's many layers of rabbinic additions. So the Torah says, Chavav 26, what will make a person tamei if they touch it, and will make them have to put their clothes in the mikveh if they carry it? Any animal that has a split hoof, but it's not completely split, that was like the camel. The camel had a split hoof, but not a complete split, and therefore it was not a kosher animal. V'geira inena ma'ala, does not chew its cud. Tmeim heim lachem, they are tamei to you, meaning not only are they not kosher, but they actually are tamei. Kol anogea b'hem yitma, if you touch them after they are dead, then you become tamei. So as the Torah just said before, if you touch it after it's dead, you become tamei. If you carry it, then you become tamei and your clothing becomes tamei, and you have to put your clothing in the mikveh as well. V'chol aleich al kapav, and anything that goes on its paws, like a dog. V'chol hachaya ha'oleches al arbal, all wild animals that go on 4 feet, it'll be like a bear or something like that. Tmeim heim lachem, they are tamei to you, meaning they make you tamei. Kol anogia b'nivlasam yitmoa da'arav, anybody who touches their corpse becomes tamei until evening. V'anoseas nivlasam, somebody who carries their corpse, yichabes begadav v'tamei ad'arav, shall wash their clothing, means put their clothing in the mikvah, and may tamei until evening. Tmeim heim lachem, they are tamei to you. Let's pause here and just explain how this works. Give a basic overview of the laws of Tuma and Tara, even though right in the middle right now, and we're going to continue with more, but let's give a basic overview before we go on any further. There are 4 categories of things that can become Tame. 4 things can become Tame. There's a different list of things that can give Tuma. It's 2 different things. Something can give Tuma, something can contract Tuma. Sometimes something can both give and contract Tuma. What can become Tame? People can become Tame. Food can become Tame. Drink can become Tame. And kalim, utensils, can become Tame. Now the word utensils, when we use that word, unfortunately people conjure up in their minds pots and pans. Although pots and pans are definitely included in the category of kalim, but they are only a very small part of that category called kalim, called utensils. Utensils not only includes pots, pans, forks, knives, spoons, etc., but kalim, utensils, also includes tables and chairs. It includes any type of usable tool, and it includes clothing. Clothing is also kalim. That's why the word utensil is not really an accurate translation of the word keli. Keli includes any usable item is a keli. Now, there are parameters to the different materials that a keli can be made out of, whether it's metal, whether it's ceramic, whether it's wood, whether it's bone, whether it's any other type of material, stone. There will be different rules, leather, there'll be different rules governing how broadly do we define the category of kli, depending on the material that it is made out of. That is beyond the scope of tonight's discussion. But the reason why I bring it up is because clothing can become tame, because clothing is within the category of kalim, of utensils. That's why clothing can become tame. If a person can become tamei, food and drink can become tamei. Right now, the Torah is not discussing what can become tamei. The Torah is discussing what can give off tuma. What is the source of tuma? So one source of tuma, which we just mentioned, is a dead animal that is not kosher. A non-kosher animal, like a camel, like a bear, that is dead, gives off tuma. If you touch it, you become tamei. Now, interestingly, an animal that is alive cannot become tamei. A live animal cannot become tamei. If a live animal touches a dead animal, the live animal is not tamei, because a live animal is neither a person, nor a food, nor a drink, nor a utensil. A live animal can become food. A live animal can become drink. A live animal can become a utensil. But while it's alive, it is none of the above. And therefore, a live animal cannot become tamei. Whether it is a kosher live animal or a non-kosher live animal, it is not tamei. So if you touch a live animal, you are not tamei. Doesn't matter what live animal it is, it cannot make you tamei. A dead animal, so far we're only talking about non-kosher dead animals, we'll talk about kosher animals later, but a non-kosher dead animal is a source of tuma. Just like we know that a dead person is a source of tuma, talk about that in another place in the Torah, but a dead animal is a source of tuma. If you touch a dead animal, you become tamei. If you want to become tohar, you have to go to the mikvah. But the level of tumah that you contract when you touch the corpse of a dead animal is a lower level tumah. It's a tumah that makes me tameh, but does not in turn make my clothing tameh. Meaning, the tumah goes from the animal to me, but then it stops there. It does not go beyond me to my clothing. If I lift up the dead animal, then the tumah goes from the dead animal to me and makes me tameh, and then I in turn make my clothing tameh. Now, it doesn't only make my clothing tameh. It, once I am tameh for lifting up the dead animal, then any other thing that can become tameh, if it is on me, will become tameh. Clothing is a great example, because clothing is something that can become tameh that's on you when you lift up the dead animal. But it doesn't have to be clothing. Any other type of utensil that is on me when I lift up the dead animal will become tameh as well. If I touch the dead animal, it won't become tameh. So if I am holding in my hand a hammer, which is a utensil, and I touch a dead animal, my clothing does not become tameh, the hammer does not become tameh, but I become tameh. If I lift up the dead animal, my clothing becomes tameh, the hammer becomes tameh, as well as me, of course. And the way that happens is it touches me, I become tameh, I in turn make my clothing tameh and make the hammer that I'm carrying also tameh. That's the difference between maga, touching, and masa, lifting up the dead animal. That's what we've learned so far in the laws of tumah and tara. Yeah.
Now, is it all clothing that you're wearing, or just clothing that is touching your skin?
That's a good question. It is all clothing that you're wearing.
And your glasses?
Your glasses are utensil. They become tumah. Yeah.
If the hammer would only be if you're holding it at the time, what if you put the animal down and then pick up the hammer?
Good. So you've put the animal down, then I believe, then you put it down to pick up the hammer, then it will not make the hammer tummy. I'm pretty sure. I'm not 100%. I don't remember 100%. Yes?
What about homes and the concept of tumah, you know, filling an enclosed space under a...
Doesn't apply in this tumah. That's only with a dead person. It's only with a dead person and saras. Otherwise, you don't have that. Otherwise, the concept of ohel, which is what you're bringing up, only applies to a dead person and to tzaras. That's it. No other types of tumah.
Does this affect the Chafa Kadisha like now?
No. This has nothing to do with a dead person. So now, why do we not practice this now? Let me answer this question first.
What is in the action of lifting?
That's what the Torah says. The lifting is a greater degree of tumah. Right. No, nothing to do with acquisition. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nivra. Now, why are we not familiar with these laws? Because they are largely irrelevant. Why are they irrelevant? Because what difference does it make if you're tameh? So you're tameh. Why does it matter if you're tameh? This type of tumah, a kohen is allowed to get. There's nothing wrong with a kohen becoming tameh like this. When it comes to dead people, a kohen is not allowed to become tameh. But this type of tumah, a kohen can become tameh. There's nothing wrong with a kohen becoming tameh like this. Therefore, no one has to avoid this. There's nothing wrong with becoming tameh in this way. So there's no aveira. So what's the problem? So the problem only is, if you want to go into the Beis HaMikdash, if you want to eat from a karban, or if you're a kohen and you want to eat truma, in all those cases, you can't have this tumah. But we don't go into the Beis HaMikdash, we don't eat from karbanos, and we don't eat truma. Therefore, this tumah is not relevant to us today. It's not that it doesn't happen. It does happen. But it's not important. We live with it. It's okay. So we're tameh. That's why we don't know these laws, because they are not practical today, because they don't affect anything. You can be tameh. And we'll learn later, the Torah itself is going to say you're allowed to be tameh. So it's only that if you're tameh, you can't do certain things, but those things we can't do anyway today.
But you don't stay tameh. You can, if the evening, then you're tameh.
If you go to the mikvah.
If you go to the mikvah.
If you don't go to the mikveh, you stay tummy. You can stay tummy your whole life.
Somebody would do that?
Why not?
We could both.
There's nothing wrong with being tummy. There's nothing wrong with being tummy.
Basically, each time you hold a chicken, a dead chicken.
Well, that's a kosher animal. That's a kosher animal. That's a kosher animal. Right. So, but we're going to get to that. We'll get to kosher animals. You're right. We're going to get to kosher animals. Not a shechted one. No, but your question though would be, you're going through the store and you pick up a package of meat to see whether it's kosher or not, and you see it is not kosher. You've now picked up right? Now you didn't actually touch the meat. You touched the package. Okay, but it'll make you tummy because you picked up the meat.
So you have to remember that your tummy, if the Mashiach comes the next day, you have to remember that when
Mashiach comes, we are all presumed to be tummy.
Before you go, so what does that mean? We're all going to be in the mikvah together before we can go into the...
let's go to the mikvah.
It's going to be crowded. Why not just do it individually when you get it?
Because there's so many different types of tumah out there that... right now, there's no way to avoid it all. Everybody in this room is tummy. I'm sorry to tell you.
I can live with it.
There are different tummies. You can be tummy of something and not tummy of something
else. Yes. There are different types of tumma. As Mrs. Gray is saying, there's different types of tumma. And one can have one type of tumma and not have a different type of tumma. But we all have some type of tumma. There's no way to avoid that, because we're not careful with it today. And when Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, we say Mehera Yabana Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash should be built quickly, speedily. When it is rebuilt, we will all need to go to the mikvah. That's what we're all going to need to do in order to go into the Beis HaMikdash.
Including women.
Including women, including Kohanim, everybody. Everybody's going to have to go to the mikvah in order to go into the Beis HaMikdash.
So if someone likes to be a hunter, they have to be careful to make sure they hunt a kosher animal, not a non-kosher animal.
Well, we haven't gotten to kosher animals. When you hunt an animal, if you kill it, it becomes a nevela. It's not, you can't eat it if you don't shecht it properly. Mm-hmm. So it's, for all intents and purposes, not kosher. Now, it's not a non-kosher animal, but it's not kosher food. So we'll see. We haven't gotten to that yet. So far, we've only talked about non-kosher animals that are dead. That's the only thing we've spoken about.
Well, there are people who hunt non-kosher animals.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but hunting the animal doesn't make you tummy. Shooting it doesn't make you tummy.
No.
But touching it or lifting it up makes you tummy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good.
Well, gets out aggression. Anyway, so that is something. So far we've only learned about the tumah that one gets when touching or lifting up a non-kosher dead animal. Now the Torah continues, Chav Tes 29. V'zeh lachem atamei basheretz hasheretz al haaretz. Now remember, when we say animal, scientifically, when you use the word animal, it includes a very, very, very large amount of creatures. When the Torah uses the word animal, we're talking about land creatures that walk on feet. We're not talking about rodents. We're not talking about insects. We're not talking about fish. We're not talking about birds. So we have to see now what this here is. Basheretz hasheretz al haaretz. They translate it as?
Teeming animals.
Teeming animals. Okay, we can loosely call this rodents, but you'll see what it includes over here. So these, when it comes to smaller animals that run around, so there are only eight that, when they're dead, make you tame, and they are hacholed v'ha'achbar v'hatzav leminehu v'hanaka v'hakoach v'halata'a v'hachomet v'hatin shames. Those are the eight. And Art Scroll, in its typical way over here, does not translate any of these animals. Although, and I don't know exactly what each one is, but they include. The achbar is, of course, a mouse, although maybe it's a rat. It includes the lita'a is a lizard. A tsav is either a frog or a toad. A mole is one of these.
A weasel.
A weasel, right? right? Weasel. So you have various animals here. They're little animals or rodents, although a lizard's not a rodent, but little animals. And these eight, and only these eight, if they are dead and you touch them, make you tame. So if you stomp on a cockroach,
it's okay.
You know, cockroaches were created to be stomped on. You know that.
Oh, thank right? you. Please tell my son.
Anyway, if you stomp on a cockroach, so now you've touched a dead creature, it does not make you tame. Because a cockroach is not one of these eight that make you tame. Dead insects, when you touch them, do not make you tame. Yes?
All right. Now, if you stepped on it, you wouldn't have touched it with your skin.
That's true. That's true. You're right. You're right. If you stomp it with your hand, I know you wouldn't do that. Yeah. I'm just kidding. Or if after you stomp it,
I just wanted to know.
You're right. You're right. You're right. But if you stomp it and then you get pick it up or with, you know, but not with your hand, you pick it up with
everything.
You sweep it onto the dustpan and you pick it up. Now you're lifting it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's lifting it up. It does not make you tummy.
You don't have to come into physical contact.
Lift it. Lifting does not need physical contact. What Dina was asking is that touching does need physical contact, so if you stomp it anyway, you're not touching it. But lifting it up is just lifting it up. You don't have to actually touch it. That's why...
That's crazy.
Right.
But not on Shabbos?
Shabbos.
What is Shabbos? That's difficult.
No, you can't stomp a cockroach on Shabbos.
They know that, too.
Yeah, they know that, right? That's true. That's right, Bert. You're right. Absolutely. They really do know that.
Another interest. People sometimes have things like lizard belts or something that they wear.
Good.
Something's made, you know.
Good. Good. So the question is, when you have leather and it's already been processed and worked, does it still retain the original property in Bitami? There is a certain point of processing that will remove it from its original state. I'm not sure when we cross that threshold from being tame to not being tame. But it's a fair question when that happens. Okay, so these are the eight that make a person tame. Now, we're not going to discuss it now, but interestingly, these eight are considered a special category with the halachos of Shabbos. Just to justify Mrs. Wittenberg's statement before, they are considered a special category when it comes to Shabbos, not with killing them, because you can't kill any animal on Shabbos. However, when the halacha is on Shabbos, you can't wound any creature, any person or any animal either. When you wound a person or an animal, cut and draw blood, then that is also a malacha on Shabbos. It is a tolda, it is a lower level, it's an offshoot of the malach of Netilas Neshama, of killing an animal on Shabbos.
What if somebody's diabetic and has to take his own blood?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, there's a way to do it. So that only applies to regular animals. These eight animals, there's a discussion of, I'm sorry, not these eight. The smaller animals, the animals that have, I guess what we would say scientifically, that have an exoskeleton and their physiology is not the same as a human being, then wounding them may not be a malacha of Shabbos. Killing them is, but wounding them may not be. And the discussion about those creatures begins with these eight. There's a chapter in Masechet Shabbos that begins Shmona Shratzim, the eight, I don't know what the word sheretz translates as, teeming creatures. It refers to these eight. And then it goes on to discuss, regarding Shabbos, all of the teeming creatures. So there's a discussion about it just because of these eight. So that's just FYI. We're not going to get into that now. That's a Shabbos discussion. But as far as what the Torah is discussing here, we're talking about Tumah and Tara. So now the Torah continues, Laman Aleph 31. Eila hatmeim lachem b'chol hasharetz. These eight are the ones that are tamei for you and all of the shrutzim, all the teeming animals. Kol anagea b'hem b'mosam. Anybody who touches them when they're dead, yitma ad ha'arev, becomes tamei till evening. Now, every time we've said that you become tamei, we've said until evening. So what that means is you go to the mikvah, but after you go to the mikvah, you're still not completely tahar until the sun sets. It's a two-step process. It's going to the mikveh and then waiting till the sun goes down. Once those two things happen, then the person is tar. So if a person goes to the mikveh an hour before sunset, then an hour later, they would become tar. If a person goes to the mikveh an hour after sunset, they would not be completely tar for the next 23 hours until the next evening, till sunset. You have to have the mikveh and then sunset as well. Now, the status of a person between the time they went to the mikveh and the time the sun goes down is called tevul yom. Tevul yom literally means dipped that day, gone to the mikveh that day. That's what it means. So the tevul yom status is a lower level status of tumah. By going to the mikveh, the tumah has been downgraded, but it is not completely gone until the sun goes down. It's a two-step process to remove the tumah completely. It's a nuanced issue of what the difference is between the full-fledged tumah and the lower-grade tumah. It has to do with what exactly a person is not allowed to do with a karban and with the Beis HaMikdash and with truma, but when they're fully tumah and when they are a tevul yom, when they're downgraded status. But either way, you're not completely tahar until the sun also goes down. Question?
No,
I answered it. Okay, fine.
But they could still do things, or they
would be... There's a certain amount that you can't... It's a lower grade. There's certain things that become permitted, but other things are still prohibited until the sun goes down. Yeah. Okay. Lamed Beis 32. V'chol asher yipol alav mehem b'mosam yitma, and anything that falls upon it from them when they are dead become tamei, which means if any one of these eight dead creatures falls on something after it is dead, then that thing, that utensil, that kli, that item will become tamei. Mikol kliates, from all wooden utensils, o beged, or clothing, o or, or leather, o suck, or sackcloth, kol klia sheye yasem melachavahem, all utensils that work can be done with them, they all become tamei. How do they become tahar? Bamayim yuva, they shall be brought into water. Vitamei ado erev, then they're tamei till evening. Vitaher, and then they are completely tahar. So here the Torah tells us a broad sweeping description of utensils, all types of materials, wood, clothing, leather, sack, anything that one does malacha with. If any of them are brought into contact with a dead animal that is tamei, then they become tamei, and the process for them becoming tahar is the same as a person becoming tahar. They are put into the mikveh, and then at nightfall, they become completely tahar. So if your hammer becomes tamei, then you put it in the mikveh, and then that evening, when the sun goes down, the hammer becomes tahar. If your fork becomes tamei, then you put it in the mikveh, and then that evening at sunset it becomes tahar. If your phone becomes tamei, you put it in the mikveh, and that evening it becomes tahar. Now, if you don't want to put it in the mikveh, then it remains tamei. But you can't get rid of it. You can't get rid of the tumah without putting it in the mikveh. It remains tamei until it is put in the mikveh. Now, so your phone will be tamei. That's all. As we'll see presently, it's okay if something remains tamei. But everything that comes in contact, any kind of utensil, if it comes in contact with any of these items, any of these dead animals, will become tamei, and the same process is necessary to make it tahar. Yeah?
Could you put it in earth to make it tahar?
No.
Again?
No. It remains tamei. Now, if you break it to the point where it is not usable anymore, in many cases that will make it tahar.
How do you use it then?
What's that?
Then how do you use it?
If you break it and then reconstruct it, then it would be, in many cases, it depends on the case, it would be tahar. Now, the Torah here doesn't list metal, and it doesn't list earthenware, because earthenware is going to be a special category all to itself, which we're about to talk about. And that's going to be actually the most fascinating of all of the utensils to discuss. And metal is derived, and it is actually more stringent than all the other cases of tumah. There are certain utensils that do not become tamei. Those would be utensils that, first of all, if they are not movable, so a building does not become tamei. Notwithstanding what you brought up before about the ohel, about the area, but a building does not become tamei. It is attached. Anything attached is actually not movable, and a building are really two different categories. Not movable means that it's a large, dresser, and when it's filled up, it's too heavy to move. Something which is too heavy to move when it is full does not become tamei. It has to be a movable item even when it is full. So something which is not movable when it is full, and the Gemara discusses what the formula for that is, then it will not become tamei. Something attached to the ground will not become tamei. That's why a building does not become tamei. Anything attached to the ground does not become tamei. a wooden utensil that is nothing but a flat board, even though it is a utensil, will not become tamei. So that would be something similar to a spatula, not really a spatula, because a spatula really is curved. But what do you call that thing that they use to take bread out of an oven? A large
paddle.
A paddle or pizza thing, right. In the Gemara, it's called a rachas. So that item is just a flat wooden board. It's shaped, but it's flat. So that would not become tamei. So there are various things like that, that there are various exceptions to the rule of tuma and tara. But generally speaking, most items that are usable can become tamei, and they do become tamei. And therefore, and Mrs. Blight, just to make you feel even better, not only are we all tamei, but most likely almost everything we own is tamei as well.
Make me feel better.
I'm kidding.
What are the ramifications of having utensils that are
tummy?
Yeah.
Nothing. I mean, you can't eat.
Now. I mean,
then you couldn't eat a carbon with it. You couldn't eat truma with it. It's tummy. That's all. They're just tummy.
You can use your hammer to eat. Like,
right. 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 Yeah. Now, generally speaking, it's okay if something is tamei.
Are babies pure tahor right when they're born?
Yes, they're born tahor, but they can become tamei.
When they lift something?
If something tamei comes in contact with them.
Mm-hmm. So if they're wrapped in a blanket, that's tamei.
Yeah. Well, it depends. So far, we've only talked about getting tumah from a dead animal. These, when you become tamei or your utensils become tamei, we haven't talked about those things then in turn making something else tamei. That we've not discussed. And in fact, that would not happen over here. The utensil that then comes in contact with another person,
it
can't transmit it to a person.
Oh, okay.
It may be able to transmit it to food, but not to a person. We're going to talk about that right now. That'll be the next discussion.
And if you eat the food, does it become tamei?
No, eating something tamei does not make you tamei, believe it or not. Eating something tamei does not make you tamei from the Torah. Rabbinically it does, but from the Torah it does not make you tamei. So Mrs. Kaiser is asking, but you're lifting it. But you're lifting it, right. So lifting it up makes you tamei, but eating it does not, which means that if you open your mouth and someone takes the food and puts it in the back of your mouth and you swallow it, you would not be tamei from the Torah. Because you didn't lift it. Right. Okay, good. Now, this next pasuk, the next one is a prelude to the one after. Well, let me just see one second. Hold on. Yeah, the next one is a prelude to the pasuk after that. But we're about to get into a whole slew of rules that affect primarily a ceramic utensil. Now, before we discuss this, you have to know a couple of things about ceramic materials, ceramic utensils. First of all, and this is the most important of everything, a ceramic utensil cannot become tahar. Once it's tamei forever. It cannot. Mikvah doesn't work for a ceramic utensil. So, when the Torah discusses it over here, it is it's very important because it's permanent. The law is, we'll learn later, and we'll repeat this when we get there, that, you know, the tsara'as can affect the person, it can affect the person's clothing, and it can affect the person's house, building. Tsara'as makes everything that is inside the building tame. So we're going to learn later that when a person thinks they might have tsara'as in their house, then they go and they call the Kohen to come and take a look. But before they come and take a look, the Kohen says, take your items out of the house. Because if the Kohen comes and pronounces it tame, everything in the house will become tame. But the fact of the matter is that that's not a big deal because you could just take everything to the mikvah. But really what the Kohen is protecting you from is the loss of all of your ceramic utensils. Not the loss, because you could use them when they're tame, but you would have permanently made tame all of your ceramic utensils. All of your china and all of your mugs, all of your ceramic utensils would become tame and they would not be able to become tahor again. And that's what he means when he says take everything out of the house because otherwise they will become permanently tame. Now, ceramic utensils have another property which we're about to learn and I'm going to tell to you before we read it because it's easier to understand the pasuk if you're aware of this to begin with, that is different than everything else. To show you, I have to first finish this.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what's that?
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I got this. This will work. Okay. So all all tame items become tame by coming in contact or by lifting something. Now, we become tame by lifting up the dead creature. The utensil is not going to lift up anything. The utensil becomes tame by coming in contact with the dead creature. A ceramic material, if this were a ceramic mug, is completely different in the sense that if the outside of the mug, of the utensil, comes in contact with the animal, with the dead animal, the ceramic utensil is not tame. The outside is protected. It cannot become tame from anything contacting the outside of it. It's only if the, let's say, dead lizard touches the inside of the ceramic utensil, that will make the, we'll call it a mug, tame. So that is a pretty big leniency, because touching the inside is clearly less common than touching the outside. We don't generally dip lizards, dead lizards especially, in our mugs. However, although there is a leniency, there's also a stringency. And the stringency is that should the dead lizard enter or be put into or fall into the inside of the ceramic utensil, inside of the mug, it doesn't have to touch anything. As soon as it gets into the airspace of the utensil is tame. Airspace is defined as falling below the lip of the utensil. And as long as it falls beneath that lip, even if it is suspended in midair and is not touching any part of the utensil, neither the walls nor the floor of the bottom of the utensil, but it's hanging within its airspace, the ceramic item is now tame. That is not true of another material. If it's a metal cup, if the dead lizard touches the outside or the inside, it will make it tame. The outside, in this case, will become tame. It will make it tame. But if the lizard is suspended in the airspace of the metal cup will not become tame. So again, the difference between ceramic and anything else is that ceramic or earthenware is another way to put it. Earthenware materials, a utensil that is made of earthenware, the outside will not, if something tame touches the outside, the ceramic item will not become tame. On the other hand, if something tame goes into the inside airspace, even if it doesn't touch it, it will make it tame.
Does this all apply if something, of course, I don't know if they did it way back then, but a glazed ceramic mug versus an unglazed one. Does it make any difference if it's glazed or not?
So it does make a difference if it is baked or not. Meaning if it's just a mud or clay that has been dried in the sun and has not been baked, then it is called a kli adama. It's called a dirt, literally a dirt kli. That is not considered something that can become tameh according to the Torah. But once it is baked in a kiln, once it's heated up, even if it is not glazed, it can become tameh. Right. So now, let's read that in the Torah. So Pasuk Lam and Gimel, verse 33. V'chol kli cheres, all earthenware utensils, ceramic utensils, ashipol mehem, that will fall from them, meaning from those creatures which we just mentioned before, el tocho, to its inside, to its toch. Toch means the inside. So it goes into its toch, to the inside. Then, now look how the Torah phrases it. Kol asher besocho yitma, all that is inside of the utensil becomes tameh, ve'osos ishboru, and it you need to break. Meaning, there is no way to make it tahar. The only thing you can do, if for whatever reason you can't keep it as tameh, the only thing you can do is break it. But you can't keep it and make it tahar. Now, could you keep it and keep it tameh? Yes, we'll learn that later. But if you would like to not have a tameh utensil here in your house, then there, the only thing you can do is break it. But not only that, says the Torah, but when the lizard is now suspended in the airspace of my ceramic mug, the mug is tameh and anything inside the mug is tameh. So that means if I have water or I have grapes in my ceramic mug or bowl, and then a lizard, a dead lizard, is suspended in the airspace of the mug or the bowl, the mug becomes tameh, and so does the food inside the mug. The food also becomes tameh. Yes?
Eventually the lizard is going to fall in the
food. Unless someone's holding it. I mean, let's say someone's hanging it, you know, holding onto it, and it's hanging over there, right? So then the it will become tameh, but and so will the food or the drink that's inside the mug. Anything inside the mug will become tameh as well. Now the process over here is that the mug becomes tameh, and the mug in turn turns around and makes the food or the drink tameh. That's how it makes it tameh. So it's not the same thing as when a dead person is in a room, then everything in the room becomes tameh, right? Mm-hmm. That's because the tumah fills up the room. Mm-hmm. That's not what's happening over here. What's happening over here is the tumah makes the mug tameh or the bowl tameh, which then in turn makes the food tameh. That's what happens. So that is so far fairly straightforward. Now the next pasuk lamed dalid 34. I just want to read you the words of Rashi before we read this pasuk. I don't even know if we're going to be able to finish this pasuk tonight. I'll read the whole pasuk, but we're probably going to have to lead off with it again next week. Rashi tells us, "Lamadnu mikan dvarim harbe." We learn from here many things. Just to give you an idea, you know, on Shabbos morning, after the Kolel Kiddush, I always give a shir. It goes for about 45 minutes. And it's about various topics. So one year, Parsha Shmini, I gave a shir for 45 minutes on this pasuk. Because Rashi says, we learn from here, Dvarim Harbe, we learn many things from this pasuk. Now, if for this class, I don't know if we're going to go through all that detail, but we'll go through a lot of it. There's a lot that is learned from this pasuk. So let's read the pasuk and at least understand it on a basic level, and we'll see how much we cover tonight and whether we need to continue with it next week. So the pasuk says, again, continuing with this case of the ceramic mug and, or let's call it a bowl, and the lizard or the mouse, the dead lizard is now suspended inside of it, making it tamei and anything inside of it tamei as well. Mikol ha'ochel asher yeyachel, from all food that is eaten, asher yavo alav mayim, that water comes upon it, yitma, it shall become tamei. V'chol mashke asher yishaseh, and all drinks that can be drunk, v'chol kli, and all utensils, yitma, will become tamei. It doesn't sound so complicated, although it's hard to read the pasuk, exactly what the pasuk means. So this simple way to read the pasuk is, it's describing what is inside this bowl that becomes tamei besides the bowl. The bowl becomes tamei, and then there's something inside the bowl that becomes tamei as well. Says the Torah, not anything inside the bowl becomes tamei, only food or drink that's inside the bowl becomes tamei. So it says, again, I'm going to read it again in English, from all food that can be eaten, that water has come upon that food, it becomes tamei, and all drinks that can be drunk in all utensils becomes tamei. So in this ceramic bowl, I have grapes or I have a drink. Then when this lizard is suspended in the airspace of the bowl becomes tamei, and the food becomes tamei, and the drink becomes tamei. That means that if in this bowl is not food or drink, but another bowl, that other bowl will not become tamei. Only the first bowl will become tamei. So when we say what's inside the bowl becomes tamei, it's only food or drink inside the bowl becomes tamei. A bowl inside of a bowl is a little bit of a complicated situation because maybe the lizard is also in the airspace of that bowl. So instead of saying a bowl inside of a bowl, let's say that there is a little, there's a small pot holder. That's on the bottom of the bowl. That's a utensil. That's a utensil. And the lizard, dead lizard, is hanging in the airspace of the ceramic bowl. The bowl becomes tamei, but that pot holder will not become tamei because the lizard is not touching it. And even though it's inside of the bowl, but it's neither food nor drink. Only food or drink inside the ceramic bowl will become tamei if the lizard is now suspended inside of this bowl. That's what the Torah is saying in this pasuk. Now, there's still a few words that are not understood because it says, from all food that can be eaten, that water has come upon it.
Has come or
like
will
it's
come.
Covered
it
in
just
water?
Says come.
Well, what does it say? How did it translate it here?
Yavo, which means will come.
Yes, that's
and
true.
In the English, it says comes in the present tense.
In the present tense. Okay. So this is actually something which the Torah itself will describe a little bit later. But here, let's at least introduce it now and we can repeat it when we get to it later. The rule is that anything that grows from the ground, that truth is, it applies a little bit more than that. But let's at least, for simplicity's sake, we'll talk about things that grow from the ground. Anything that grows from the ground that is food, so that's fruits, vegetables, grains, anything that grows from the ground that is edible, when something that is tamei touches it, it does not become tamei before it goes through a process that enables it to become tamei. Now, I'm going to confuse you here.
Really?
There's a process that it has to go through, meaning that you have an apple growing from a tree. Now, as long as it's attached to the tree, which is attached to the ground, it is not going to become tamei. Anything that is still attached to the ground is not going to become tamei. So if a dead lizard touches that apple, the apple is still tohar. It is not tamei. The apple now falls from the tree. It is no longer attached to the ground. And now a dead lizard touches it. It's still not going to become tamei unless the apple has undergone a process that enables it to become tamei. This process only has to happen once. Once this process happens, then for the rest of the life of this apple, it can now become tamei. What is that process? Now, before I tell you what the process is, this is the confusing part. The process is called making it kosher. Now, it doesn't mean kosher to eat, because kosher doesn't mean what we think it means. The word kosher does not mean pure. It doesn't mean permitted. The word kosher means enabled. That's what the word kosher means.
Enabled.
Enabled. Enabled, yes. So when we use the term kosher, kosher food is it's enabled for us to eat it. But kosher can also mean that something which wasn't able to do something until now, now it's gone through a process that has enabled it to be able to do that thing. It's been mukhshar. It has become kosher to, for that thing to happen. This process is called making it kosher, or mukhshar, lekabel tuma, to become, to contract tuma. What is that process? Liquid has to touch the food after it has become detached from the ground. So an apple, it's on the tree, it rains on the apple. The apple is not yet mukhshar, is not yet enabled to become tameh. The apple falls from the tree and it rains. Now the apple can become tameh. It's not tameh because the dead lizard didn't touch it yet, but it's been enabled to become tameh. So food that grows from the ground has a two-step process to become tameh, meaning that it falls from the tree, a dead lizard touches it, it's not tameh, because it was never mukhshar lekabel tuma, never went through that process of being enabled to become tameh. But once liquid touches it, even if it's then dried, it doesn't make a difference. Liquid has touched it, now it is able, it's enabled to become tameh whenever. Doesn't matter if it's wet, dry, where it is, now it can become tameh. But until that the item becomes wet, it cannot become tameh. Good question.
So if a person came across that apple, they wouldn't know whether it was
tameh or tar.
Right.
Correct. You wouldn't
know.
Know
if it ever was right. touched
right.
by liquid.
However, you can presume that the apple is tar because there's no dead lizard nearby. It's, how did the dead lizard get there? Right? If it fell there, it would still be there, you would think. Unless some other creature came and took it.
You wouldn't know if it had,
yes, you wouldn't have rain hit it. That's right. That's right. So that's what it means when it says in the Pasuk, from all food that can be eaten, that water shall come upon it. That's why it says water shall come upon it. Because if the food can be eaten, but water never came in contact with it, and we'll see later it's not just water, it's any liquid, then it would not be able to become tameh. So again, you have this ceramic bowl. The ceramic bowl has a lizard dangling, dead lizard, dangling in its airspace. The bowl becomes tameh. Not only does the bowl become tameh, but any drinks in the bowl become tameh, and any food that had already been enabled to become tameh because liquid touched it, that food would also become tameh. So far, that's what the Torah is teaching us. Yes.
So why doesn't it use the past tense upon which water had come?
That's a good question. That's a good question. But the truth is that...
It's just the way it is.
Yeah, and the nuance of the language. No. It really can be explained, but it's really nuanced in the language. It's a little bit more involved to explain that. Okay? Now, there is more, but we're going to stop here with this. There is more on this pasuk. There's a few more points to make, and Mitzvah Hashem will lead off with it next week. So next week we'll begin with a short review of these last few points, and then we'll move on to the other points that are learned from here.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.